I went abseiling off a viaduct, I think, in Merthyr Tydfil once. When I was a kid, it was the most terrifying experience of my life.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast.
Sapnin!
Sapnin!
You are listening to episode 163 of Sapnin Podcast, featuring myself, Sean Smith, and my good friend, Morgan the Organ Richards.
Yes, it's me, Morgan Richards, and we're starting 2022 by pushing the senses with comfort in sound. At least, that's just the way I'm feeling.
Yes! Happy New Year, everyone! I am completely ignoring everything he just said, because later on in this chat, I make a faux pas that is so bad, it made me want to cringe inside myself and then die. This week's guest is singer, songwriter, and all-round legend, Grant Nicholas of Welsh Rockers, Feeder!
Yes, what a human, what a songwriter, what a band Grant Nicholas and Feeder are. For close to three decades now, Feeder have been a staple influence across the UK's grunge, indie and alternative scenes. They have done literally everything from releasing countless hit singles to headlining worldwide major festivals, all while keeping a unique identity and vision. Grant's songwriting is some of my all-time favourite, especially when I was growing up, and being the Welsh royalty he is really showed people like you, Sean, that it doesn't matter where you come from, you can get out, tour the world, and do some amazing things.
Yeah, this was such a great chat, and it was so nice to speak to Grant. And the crazy thing is, like, how long was I in the blackout? 13 years? 13 years, and my path never really crossed with Grant or any of Feeder. I think at some point we probably would have met at a festival or something, but no, it never happened. So getting to do this was an absolute pleasure, and I really, really enjoyed it. And again, I made a faux pas that's really, really bad, that I swear on my family's lives, right, that I did not mean to say what I later on say, which was the most awkward thing I've ever done on a podcast ever. So that should keep you listening.
Oh, it's comedy gold. I can literally tell you it is comedy gold. So it's worth the listen. But literally throughout, Grant is so open with us and on the band's story and even secrets behind some of their biggest tracks like Buck Rogers and Just a Day. And we talk everything from their new album Torpedo, which is going to be released now on the 18th of March, 2022. Ooh.
Happy birthday, Jan. Happy birthday, Jan. Feeder put an album out for you.
You know what to get it now. Elements of songwriting and the band's identity. Their strange experience of headlining Download Festival in 2005. The 90s Welsh rivalry between themselves, Stereophonics and Manic Street Preachers. And just stories about Dave Grohl's mum, Taylor Swift, and even the Rolling Stones' Shepherd's Pie.
Ah, oh, that is a good one. That is a fucking corker. Ah, very, very good. Very, very, very good stories. I can't get over that we got to do it. And it was good to see him. Was a couple of questions I missed out. I wanted to ask him who would win in a fight between Feeder, GLC and Skindred for King's Newport. There's more of the GLC, isn't it? And I feel like the GLC might bring weapons. So
that's true, to be honest. But if you think you've got an answer, let us know at SaplingPod on Twitter and Instagram.
Oh, nice. Good plug for the socials there. Or if you want to ask us anything at all about the podcast or suggest guests, please tag the bloody guests if you're suggesting them. At SaplingPod, that's at SaplingPod, at SaplingPod. That's on Twitter and Instagram.
Or you could check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/sapling. We're on there. Not only do you help us make these bloody podcasts each and every week, but you get invited into our wonderful community of human beings that help each other talk and just have a laugh on the daily. And there's going to be even more bonus content exclusively on our Patreon wall in 2022. We're going to be talking to people to see what they actually want and record some extra fun things. So if you want to be involved in everything Sapling Podcast first, head over to patreon.com/sapling, please. It would help us out a lot.
Yes. He is correct. Please check out our Patreon. It all goes back into this podcast and keeping us alive. So I really enjoyed this chat with Grant. I felt at some points that he almost looks down on some of the stuff Feeder's done when it should be celebrated more, I think. But having listened to this and having been involved with this, I'm sure everybody is going to have a brand new appreciation for Feeder after this, because he's such a fucking sweetheart and he's such a lovely, lovely human and great songwriter. So thanks again to Grant. Thanks to Feeder for the years of music and for all of us getting to jump up and down on a field shouting CD player, 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 player.
Exactly. So this is Grant Nicholas from Feeder on episode 163 of Sapling Podcast.
Happy New Year and Sapling!
Sapling!
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weight loss. That's PlushCare.com/weight loss. PlushCare.com/weight loss.
Sapling.
Hey.
Yes. This week's guest is singer, multi-instrumentalist, and a platinum-selling artist,
ooh,
Grant Nicholas, from the fantastic and wonderful Feeder. How are you, Grant?
I'm fine, thanks. God, that was a nice big up for me there. Thank you, boys.
No worries. Well, what didn't I say? That was
no,
true.
No, it was like, yeah, I think that was the most compliment I've had in those few lines that I've had in the last like 30 years of being in a band.
Wow.
Well, I'll tell you what. Well, we won't spoil it. We'll leave it there.
No, well, for us, we should add on that you're actually Welsh royalty to us as well. So there's going to be a lot of phrases throughout this episode, I'm sure.
That's fine with me, boys. And that's That's fine with me. I need some at this moment.
That's fine. But how are you doing anyway? How's your morning going? How's life at the moment?
Yeah, good, thanks. Well, yeah, apart from a few technical problems, a bit of internet problems this morning, but we've finally managed to hook up. But yeah, no, all good, really. Just doing a few interviews. I did some writing yesterday. I'm still writing songs. I'm always writing songs. Yeah, I've got my acoustic here. This is the one I do most of the writing on. It's just an easy, it's just always around. It's my old Gibson, but it's just a really nice guitar to play, and it's it's just one you can just pick up at any time. And I mean, I write most of the stuff on this guitar, or on any acoustic guitar really that's around the house. I find it's a good way of, you know, that sort of first step into writing something is usually on acoustic guitar for me. So yeah, not a very exciting morning. I had some coffee. That's it really.
Nice. Do you always find yourself just randomly grabbing that guitar and strumming away ideas like at the most random times, or?
Yeah, walking around the kitchen, I drive my family mad probably. Yeah, my kids are like, oh, Dad, could you shut up for a minute? I'm writing this song. I don't have any real sort of like routine. I'm not one of these sort of 9 to 5, you know, I don't think you can do music like that. I mean, I do tend to sort of write, I do tend to work more in the daytime actually than evenings as far as actual writing goes. I don't really have a sort of regimented sort of, you know, regime where I have to sort of work for these hours. I just pick it up and it, I might write something and it's almost done in like half an hour, and then the songs take a bit longer. I tend to put down ideas just on my iPhone. So I've got literally hundreds of songs that I've sort of started and completely forgotten about. So if I ever have a bit of a dry period, I'll just try and find some on there, see how they sound. You know, and I put down parts on my phone a lot as well. So if I've got like the main song, I'll work out a few little guitar parts and I go on, and then just so I don't forget them. It's very rough, you know, but it's a good way of doing it.
Yeah. Do you have, is there any songs that you've never finished, or like you're still trying to finish that didn't take
yeah,
half hour?
I'm sure there's quite a few on my phone, but yeah, there's not so much. There is a few feeder tracks I think we didn't quite finish to the end, maybe got the drums on. I can't, there's a few that we can't even find because it was back in the days of 2-inch tape. And I think they went missing somewhere with our old label. Maybe, you know, you probably got thrown on a skip somewhere. But no. It's a shame because there was a couple of good ones that we started with John back in the day. And I don't know whatever happened to those. But in general, we've finished most. So I've gone back and used them and been finishing them off as B-sides. But there's a few solo things that I've got that were 3/4 finished that I've never put out. But not so much feeder stuff because we've done so many B-sides and, you know, and stuff like that. A lot of them have been used. I mean, I was talking, going through all the publishing about 6 months ago, just sorting out a few things. And I realized I've written, this is before this all this new stuff, over 240 songs now for feeder, which is quite a few,
wow,
isn't it?
Wow.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're all good, but it's quite a list. I was quite shocked, actually. It's like, you know, when you add up all the B-sides and the albums, I suppose, you know, it all adds up, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's insane. Yeah,
but when you think of something like that, you must think, how did I come up with that many lyrics? Like, alone, dreaming?
I know. Well, I probably repeat myself a lot, but I think most singers do. But you know what it is? I think as you get older, you do experience a bit more. And I've got kids now. I didn't have kids for the first 3 records. And it changes to sort of, you know, your whole view on life a little bit. It gives you a bit more to write about. Kind of worry about things a bit more for the future, you know, for your family, and also, you know, you write more about family stuff as well, and just people that you meet through that. You know, you meet a lot of new people through having kids, and that often inspires you and stuff like that. And you know, it's been a pretty crazy time as well, so that anything that's happening around at that time, whether it's some of the news or the what we've been going through for the last few years, I mean, obviously that's going to go into some songs. So that's what keeps you keeps the ideas there. But yeah, it is hard. I mean, you know, writing lyrics is always difficult because, you know, people can criticize words and lyrics. But for me, the best thing about it, doesn't matter how simple a song is, if the lyrics like connect with people, that's the key, you know. And to me, when those songs come along, that's like gold, you know. And it's, some artists are really good at doing it, and you know, and some aren't. But it's something which you never really, you're always learning, you know. It's like, it's, I'm still learning that apprenticeship of songwriting, you know. I've been doing it for a long time.
yeah. Well, touching on that, really, you mentioned already that you've been in the music game for almost 3 decades now, and so much has kind of changed within feeder and just the whole industry. But when you have moments like that and looking back and seeing all the songs you've written, like, is there anything that comes to mind in terms of the way you've changed as a songwriter or just a person or just dealing with life? Because, you know, you've been through quite a lot of things openly with the band, and that I'm sure it's interesting to look back at where you started to where you are now.
Yeah, I mean, I think that where we started as a band, that kind of vision we had, you know, when I first met John and we were growing up in South Wales and wanted to be in a band, we were very into three-piece bands. You know, me and John, you know, loved the Police and loved the Jam and stuff like that. We liked that chemistry that we had to bands like Rush, even, you know, quite proggy band. It was sort of something about a three-piece band that you had to work really hard, but there was a real chemistry that you had there. So that was always the original plan. And it kind of, although we're often four or five-piece band now live, I still feel as though Feeder still feels like a three-piece at heart. I know it might sound strange, but I love what the other guys still sort of like bring to it with the keyboards and obviously Tommy on guitar, and he's absolutely amazing. But I think I still approach the songs still certainly when I'm recording and writing them in that kind of three-piece headspace still. So that hasn't changed. But as far as what I've learned over the years, I might probably nothing. No. I think I'd say what it is. I think what I've done is it's like I've accepted in my strengths, I think, and I've accepted, you know, this is what I do. If people like it, great. If they don't, I can't change that. Accepted my voice a bit more now because I didn't have burning desire to be a frontman singer in a band. I wanted to play guitar and write songs in a band. The singing came just by accident, really. And it's been really useful for me and probably very useful for the band that it's quite, you know, if you're a writer and you can sing a bit and you know, obviously you play an instrument, it is really useful. You know what I mean? You don't have to be the best singer in the world, but you can get all the melodies and stuff like that. So it's been a really useful thing for me. And I think as I've got older, I've got a bit more confident, you know, with singing. And I think doing my solo record as well at Yorktown Heights, which was a very stripped back record. It was basically Feeder without all the big guitars and all, you know, the heavy drums, hearing my voice much more up front. I think, although that happened quite late in my career, I think that was a good thing for me as a writer. And I think it's been a good thing for Feeder as well, because it did make me approach things a bit differently after that. I'm probably waffling on now. I'm just trying to explain
No. This podcast is for waffling and hearing the stories.
But yeah, I mean, the thing is, but I don't want to lose our identity as a band. There's some people like the heavier side of Feeder and some people like the more mellow side, you know. But we've always had those elements since we first signed our record deal. The reason we were actually where we got signed wasn't just for the heavy stuff. It was actually more for the acoustic stuff. So I was told afterwards, because they thought, oh, this band, you know, we were like, you know, we were sort of pushed in with the kind of, where they're kind of grungy. We were called the British Smashing Pumpkins and all those labels like Nirvana and all like that. And that was great. But we also had these acoustic songs. And I think they realized that this band could evolve. And maybe as a writer, I could do that. And that's what's happened, because it was always there. You know, I grew up listening to 70s artists like, you know, super mellow stuff like Fleetwood Mac and, you know, Nick Drake I got into, and then Simon Garfunkel. But I was also into like Black Sabbath and Led Zeppelin and Sex Pistols at the same time. But I think you can hear all that in Feeder's, you know, music, you know, because it's there. You know, all those influences are there. You know, a lot of American stuff like Tom Petty, you know, Neil Young. Obviously, you know, like Beatles and that kind of stuff as well. But I was really brought up on a lot of, you know, British music, but also a lot of American music as well, actually, which is why I think that's where the big choruses and all the melodies come from. I've always loved big choruses and anthemic choruses, and that's part of Feeder's trademark in some way, I think.
Yeah, no, for sure. But do you feel like having that interesting dynamic between those kind of slower ballads and acoustic songs and the heavier grunge stuff has opened you up to a lot of different kind of audiences? Because every time I've been to Feeder shows, you do see that kind of that separation sometimes. That, you know, there's people going into really wanting to have maybe a little dance in the marsh, and there's people that want to sing along like their heart's content as well. So how has that been for you over the years?
It is strange. I mean, obviously, I love the whole, you know, all the old school mosh pit thing, because, you know, it's great to be on stage and to have that. I mean, we still do have that. I know it's got a lot stricter now with the, you know, with security and stuff, but we still do get that vibe at our shows. And not just older people that will be coming to our gigs that are the old school Feeder fans, but even, you know, we got quite a lot of young kids come to our shows as well. And I think 90s music is actually quite, has really hit a mark with a lot of young kids nowadays. And I think we're probably probably better timing for a band like Feeder. You know what? I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that shows a band that have evolved. I think we haven't ever moved away from what we set out to do. It's just that we've had, as the years have gone by, some of our records have been, you know, a bit more radio friendly, or they were just came out at the right time, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
I think some of our best albums came out at the wrong time and they got a little, they went a bit more under the radar, but that's just the way it is. I think, God, if that one came out now, every band's got that. And it is frustrating, but it's just down to the musical climate and how much media want to support stuff. And, you know, I'm talking even before SoundCloud and all that sort of stuff where you can stream and find out stuff. And, you know, we're not so much SoundCloud, but you know, like streaming, you know, Spotify and stuff. SoundCloud's a bit old school now, isn't it? It's showing my age, but it's just a different world now. But I think, you know, to answer your question, I think we've always had those sort of songs. I think maybe it's just more of a mixture of age groups now. But what I am pleased about is it's not just the same people coming to our shows. And that's maybe why it felt a bit like that for you coming. Maybe there are some people that got into the band from maybe Echo Park onwards or Comfort and Sound onwards. There's some people that just know Feeder for like just a day and Buck Rogers. And I just find that extraordinary because we've had so many more radio songs that if you know the band, you know, and you know, some of those more mainstream fans that come, I think they're quite surprised when they hear the heavy stuff and we start playing like Kyoto or something, you know, like, but it seems to work. And I think sometimes, you know, if you play a real heavy track to people that aren't quite used to it, it can have a real impact and actually really works, you know, but it's nice to have that. I mean, it's a bit like watching a film. It's great to have a real action packed film, but you need a little bit of dynamic, you know, you need a bit of light and shade, don't you? And I think dropping in a song like High amongst a song like, I know, an old school song like Shade or something, to me is what I love about being in Feeder, and you know, is what I love about being a songwriter, that we've always done that and we've got the freedom to do that. Some bands are quite, they have one thing and they do it really well and that's what people want. But we've been quite lucky because we've got quite a, although we're an indie rock band or whatever you want to call us, we've got quite a big musical canvas, actually, you know. And I think that's just down to the sort of the time we've been going and just the different albums and the songs, really. Sorry, I'm doing all the talking now. You better ask me the question.
No, it's fine. I love hearing all this. This is what we've wanted to hear.
But how do you feel now, like, especially going to shows and seeing maybe people who would have came 20 years ago and now bringing their kids along and you're seeing those kind of different generations? Because I definitely feel Feeder as being one of those bands to kind of fill the void for generations and then opening their catalogue to other kind of bands.
Yeah, I think I think we do our thing now. I think we've become something. We don't need to prove anything. You know, it's nice to have success and to get on the radio and people to know about the band. You know, every band sort of needs that sometimes. But we don't need that to continue as we are. We've always been one of those bands that, yeah, okay, there isn't much difference between being like an arena band and doing where we are, like a Brixham Academy now. You know, we've done arenas on Comfort and Sound, but it's just one record or being that bit more commercial, a bit more radio friendly. You know, a band like, if you compare us to Stereophonics or something, Stereophonics have never had songs as heavy as Feeder go. We have fans that, you know, probably into Stereophonics as well. They probably, I know there's some Stereophonics bands, fans that like Feeder, but we're very different bands. You know, so I'm not sure what I'm trying to say, but I don't think we've always been slightly, you know, that's why I call it Feeder an indie rock band. We've never been on a mainstream label and we've never really had that massive mainstream push. So what was the question again? I just went completely blank then.
Just seeing different generations of fans.
I'm back in there. I'm back in the zone. I think what I'm trying to say is, I think we are a bit of, you know, we have become a bit of a sort of, not all the fans, but we are a bit of a family band now. And I think that's a great thing because, you know, I know how hard it is to please my kids. So if their parents, you know, if parents have influenced their children through the music they played, I think that's a great thing. And the kids must hear something, that music that they like. You know, kids are really critical, super critical. Maybe it's the melodies, maybe it's the dynamics. It's all about songs and kids like melodies and kids like tunes. You know, it doesn't matter what kind of music it is. You know, bands like Foo Fighters are very similar. You go to a Foo Fighters gig and it's like families there. It's like you've got these people of my age group and their kids, and you know, they're that kind of band. We're not that dissimilar, really. Not quite as successful, but we're doing all right.
Yeah.
That's your fault, Grant. You should have been in Nirvana. Have you ever been in Nirvana?
Well, there was a time when Fina and Foo Fighters were about the same kind of thing. We were did similar level stuff, and then Dave Grohl, just the whole thing just went. I mean, the guy is just unstoppable, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah, you touched on, you mentioned the phonics then, the stereophonics. And, I was just wondering, because, like, when I got into rock, it was, like, late 90s, early 2000s. And, I just remember in Wales, you couldn't move for Feeder, Stereophonics, and the Manics. Was there any rivalry there? Or did you ever feel like that you were all being... You're all being pushed against each other. Sorry if it, like, I just saw from the outside.
I mean, there's always a bit of rivalry between bands. I mean, I don't know if there's rivalry between Kelly and me or whatever. I mean, I don't know. You'd have to ask him, but I always felt like we were quite different to them. I just thought we were a lot, a bit more alternative, you know, much more of a rocky band, you know. I mean, there is similarities between all three bands that we do. You know, we do have songs, and that, you know, that I think that is fair to say. And I know that we have fans who are into those bands as well. And that's not a bad thing. I mean, I love, you know, I mean, Manics have had an amazing career, and they're, you know, I think they're great bands. I mean, you know, it's very easy to mock successful bands and to have that sort of envy thing. But I think there's always a bit of healthy competition, but I think we're different enough musically to not really be stepping on each other's toes too much. And those two bands, I mean, like the Phonics are doing, I mean, they're selling out huge arenas and all that stuff. I mean, they're doing, you know, they're doing really well. Obviously, it's a different kind of thing, really, but I'm sure there's probably been bits of rivalry at times. I think everyone's a little bit competitive in this world, but nothing really, but nothing sort of, you know, like malicious, really, or anything like that. Well, certainly not my end, but yeah.
Oh, what? Who said that?
No, I mean, you have to ask them. But no, I know James a little bit, and I've sort of met them all over the years, and they've always been like incredibly sweet. And James came to John's funeral and stuff like that. And he's always been really nice. I kept in touch with him like a little bit. He said we'd be sending each other texts here and there, but you know, he's a busy guy, but. I saw Kelly last at the Tom Petty show in Tyne Park, I think it was. I think that was the last time I saw him, unless I saw him at the festival. I can't remember.
Is that the one where Stevie Nicks played too?
Yeah.
Oh, I was there. Oh, I missed that. Oh, I'd love to have seen that. Yeah. Oh, imagine a super band. Well, imagine a super band with Grant Nicholas, Kelly Jones, and James Dean Bradfield.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Well, I did ask, actually, James was going to come and do the gig. I asked him and he was really sweet about it and he couldn't do it in the end. He was going to come. I asked him to come on stage with it when we did our big homecoming gig in Chepstow Racecourse.
Oh, wow.
And I called him up saying, oh, will you just come on and do a track with us? So I was going to get him to come on and do like Just Today or something. Dude, he could do one of his classic solos, you know, and I thought, and it was all happening and then suddenly he couldn't do it. So yeah, that was a shame, but I definitely would do some work with James and stuff. Yeah. He's, you know, it'll be interesting.
Ooh, nice. There we are.
Yeah, we've started something. I'm going to write it down. Get Grant and James together. Get
super duper Welsh super group.
He's definitely better solos than me, but I might have him on the riffs. He's a really good guitar player.
Yeah, no, for sure. But speaking of having benefits for being Welsh, am I right in saying that many moons ago when you left Wales originally to go to London and everything, you actually... turned up at a studio looking for a job and they gave you one just because you said you were Welsh?
Yeah, that's true, actually. Basically, what happened was I did like this sort of gateway, like music, like crash course, just learning how to do basic engineering stuff. Because I always wanted to work in recording studios just to sort of experience that whole thing. And so I had a little bit of, you know, I knew I had to plug in a mic and stuff. I wasn't by, you know, any means like a great engineer. I just went around. I tried to get a job at Rockfield because I used to know Kingsley that owns it from when I was younger, but he didn't have any jobs, guys. So I literally just turned up, sort of ponytail, I think I had at the time, long hair, like banging on studio doors, just like, give us a job. Honestly, it was like that. And I remember hitting the buzzer going, beep, beep, hello, who is it? I've just come on the train from Wales. I just wondered if you've got any jobs going. I said, like, I'll make coffee, make tea. I just want to work in the studio. And the guy that owned it, one of the guys that owned it was called John Wadlow. And he goes, oh, he sort of like buzzed me in. And he just happened to be, he used to go to Wales on holiday, and he said he loved Wales. And that's why he let me in. It was complete luck. And I got on really well with him, and I got a job, and I worked there for about 3 years, and he ended up being a Seal, Seal, the singer. He was like massive at the time. I knew Seal before he was famous. And then John ended up being his manager. So he did really well. It was a really interesting place to work. Actually, I worked with some really, it was a lot of dance music, a lot of some rock bands, but I was working with people like Adamski, like old school stuff.
Even nice.
You're probably too young to know all this. Seal. It was all that.
Yeah.
Period.
I'm 37. Yeah, I'm 37, Grant. I remember all of those hits. Adamski Killer. Oh, what
Adamski Killer was a great set. Well, I remember hearing that for the first time. And I remember the whole, it was all like coming in, and I see it was just doing like live vocals on a DAT. The whole thing was just, the way that all came about, how Seal became this massive star. I saw that happen. It was quite amazing, really, because he always had something about him. He was very charismatic, and as soon as he walked into the room, he looked like a rock star or something. You know what I mean? He was like big, tall guy with his dreads, and he was quite well spoken. He just had this really nice voice, and he was just sort of pushy and stuff. I just thought, oh, this guy's going to end up doing well. And I remember sitting down, he used to play guitar, acoustic and stuff. He was just sort of learning how to play guitar really and stuff like that. And then he had this voice, and I think he did a live vocal or something along to one of Adamski's tracks in a club or something. And that's how that whole thing came about. It was, it was an interesting time.
Wow.
Yeah, that's, what a mad story. Yeah.
It was good for me. Yeah. It was good for me because I got to work with a lot of people, and just seeing how records are made, and just, it was all old school tape machines then. I had to go in and line up two machines and stuff like that. And I did a bit of engineering here and there. It was a different world, but I did get to work with some rock bands, and that's where I met Chris Sheldon, who ended up doing our first album with us.
That's nice. Amazing.
That's awesome.
Years later.
Yeah. That's crazy to think, though, that you went and knocked the door, and then all that came from it. Do you know what I mean?
I was just saying, anyone looking to do anything, just go for it, because, there's no rules. Just like a bit of, it was pure luck. It was just luck.
Yeah, I just imagine someone from Merthyr turning up on a door, though, and knocking a door. you haven't any fucking jobs, have you? turn around and fuck off, Taffy. Yeah. Get out of here.
Imagine.
But it was good. So, yeah, big thank you to him for letting me do that. It was good. It was a good experience. It was hard work, but it was good fun. I was still sort of doing music as well. And then I sort of decided I was missing being in a band. That's what I really wanted to do. So, yeah, it all went from there. And I started busking, and the rest is history.
Yeah, no, for sure. Incredible. But we should really mention Feeder's new record, Torpedo, that's coming up in March of 2022. This is your 11th record as a band, which I'm sure when you hear that in itself is crazy to think. But how did this really come about? Was it started within the lockdowns and kind of working on it? Or are these songs that you've had on the brain for a while?
What happened was, before lockdown, we'd recorded loads of stuff. I was busy writing. We did about 8 or 9 songs, pretty much finished, almost mixed ready, just a few vocals and bits and bobs. And then the whole lockdown thing happened. It was just such a weird time. I think for the first time, I'd been in Feeder, I just didn't really feel that driven to actually write anything. It wasn't that I didn't have any ideas to write. I just, because no one knew what was going on. It was a really weird time for everyone. I'm sure the same for you guys. No one knew what the hell was going on. Kind of in limbo, really. And then I basically, after about 3 months, I just picked up my guitar, this one here, actually, and I just started writing, and the songs just poured out of me, and a lot of quite rock stuff. So, basically, Torpedo was really, I suppose in general, most of it was written sort of during the whole lockdown thing. There's a few songs that were started just before that I started writing that have ended up on the album. But in general, it was mainly written sort of during the lockdown period, yeah. And the songs before, we haven't used yet. So basically what happened was, after getting all these new songs together, I thought, shit, we've got loads of songs now. I was thinking, let's do a double album. let's do the full Smashing Pumpkins thing. Let's go completely over the top and go like prog. And I thought, and then, so that was the plan. So we'd have the more pre-lockdown songs and then the stuff afterwards. And, you know, the stuff afterwards was a bit heavier. And I thought, oh, yeah, that'd be quite interesting. Shows all sides of the band. And then it went from being a double album to let's do three mini albums. And then that changed. So what we're doing is basically Torpedo is a standalone album, but if you imagine, it is a double album, but it's going to be in two halves. But rather than just be one big thing, which maybe it's just too much information for people and too many songs on one thing, we decided to sort of split them in half. So musically they're connected, but they're different in some way. I say Torpedo is probably slightly heavier than the other one. The artist that we're using, I don't know if you've seen the artwork for it. It's a Russian artist. We've also got the image already sorted for the next one as well. And the artwork is the same kind of vibe. So as a pair, they will go together, but they're still standalone albums. That's the best way of me explaining it to you. It just means that we can get the next one out. Basically, we want to avoid that. We want to sort of, we've got all these songs. I'm sure loads of artists got loads of music. They've had a lot of time to write. And I just thought, you know, rather than do the usual cycle, you know, let's put this one out and then tour it and then put the other one out in a year's time. So there'll only be a year gap, hopefully, between the two records as well. So you're going to be getting a lot of feedback, whether you like it or not.
Well, brilliant.
I like it.
Yes, that's crazy to think that you've been that creative that you have the next album all ready to go. Artwork,
it's almost
everything.
There. I mean, there's still a bit, you know, we haven't mixed it yet. And I started writing again, which it sounds weird, but I was trying not to because I just want to focus on this record. This one hasn't even come out yet. And I've got another six songs in the can. So I'm going to add those to what was going to be the second album. And maybe see if I can improve it and anything left over we use for bonus tracks or B-sides or whatever. If the songs come along, you may as well just keep them going because, you know, there may be a period where we get busy and we haven't got time to write as much or I get writer's block or whatever. It's just nice to have a load of songs there and, why there's inspiration, you know. It's probably going to be like commercial suicide for the band, but it'd be good fun to play.
No. Well, that's it. As long as you're having fun, Grant, that's all that matters. They're all that matters.
You know
really,
what? But... I mean, it's been a real testing time. You know, I mean, for everyone in all, you know, it doesn't matter what you do in life. You know, this COVID thing has been a nightmare. And I know some people that have lost, you know, close, you know, friends and loved ones. And it's been awful. But I have to admit, you know, music business has been particularly hit badly as well. And I know so many people that are, you know, that are really struggling, you know, not so much artists like myself, but, you know, people that, you know, that we rely on, you know, crew, art, you know, just that side of it as well. It's just been really bad. And even like session players as well, you know, who were doing these massive tours and suddenly find other work, which is just, I don't think they'd ever thought that would happen in their lifetime. But hopefully things are getting a bit more positive. I just hope everyone behaves now and doesn't all kick off again, you know?
Fingers crossed.
We'll see about that, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, not, I know, look.
Not
I mean,
in Merthyr.
Yeah.
Not in Merthyr, Grant. People don't give a shit. It is like the virus has never been to Merthyr. But you saying about this songs on Torpedo being heavy or whatever, and you saying it being commercial suicide or whatever. But I think in this day and age, you can't, like, I have no idea what hits and what, like, you never know. Like, at the moment, I've seen people of all different genres just throw in anything at the wall, and you're finding the weirder songs seem to take off, or not weirdest, but, you know, the ones you least expect seem to take off more. So,
you know, it's so true. That is so true. Because even, you know, some of our most commercial records haven't always connected right now. I thought it's a blatant radio song. And then I go and put something out, and, you know, I don't know if you've heard the song called Magpie. That's on this one. It was the second kind of unofficial single. I mean, and I like that track, but apparently he got played by Johnny Walker, another DJ. I don't remember. He was basically a big DJ in the 70s. He's got a 70s rock show, I think, on Radio 2. So he does think he must be in his 70s. I mean, amazing. He apparently liked the song and he played on his show last week. On Radio 2, you know, we don't really get played on Radio 2 very much. You know, we're not that, you know, we're not sort of a mainstream enough band, but I was quite encouraged by that. So a big thank you to Johnny Walker for playing Magpie. Your respect on that one. But listen, you know, the thing is, I mean, I know what you're saying. You know, sometimes the song you least expect can really, like, connect with people. And look, I just enjoy, and we enjoy, like, rocking out when we can. But, you know, we also enjoy a good tune, and it's you know, that's what we're doing, and that's what we've always tried to do.
Hmm. Where would you say is one of the weirdest places you've ever heard the Feather song over the years?
Oh, nice. Good. Nice.
Oh, God, that's a tough question. I think sometimes on random, you know, adverts and stuff like that, you know, when you get an advert and you're sick, and I'm thinking, what are they doing? It's, I mean, I'm not complaining because it, you know, obviously pays the bills, but
yeah, for sure.
we have been used on some quite random things, and you know, just suddenly, you know, you got the TV on and suddenly you hear something saying, can't recognize that song. You think, yeah, that's me. I mean, it's on some weird, it's on some, I don't know. I mean, we've been used, I know we've got used, we used to get used a lot on MasterChef.
Oh, wow.
You see, you use the sort of feeling of moment, woo! And then, you know, every time they sort of go and, you know, like, he'd win, it would be that. And it was like, great. But, and then I think they got somebody to do some library music and copied it afterwards and didn't use ours.
Oh, bastards. Absolute set of bastards.
No, I'm not sure. But, yeah, we've been on a few weird ads. We've been on a P&O Ferry ad. That was quite bizarre.
Nice rock and roll, love it.
It was a big ad though. We were asked to be when we did Comfort and Sound album, which was a pretty weird time after losing John. That, and we were asked. They there was a big advert. It was in Ireland only for, and they wanted to use the song Comfort and Sound. And at the time, I was probably a bit sensitive about it all. They wanted to use it for a cereal ad, TV ad, Comfort and Sound. I'm thinking, how random is that?
Yeah.
I mean, you just wouldn't really put that on a cereal ad, but it comes in sound.
No,
anyway.
Well.
Nothing makes me want a bowl of crunchier cornflakes more than Comfort in Sound.
Yeah, I know. But and I think we said no to it in the end, but I think nowadays you probably would say, yeah, it's fine, you can use it.
Yeah, that's the thing. But I'm sure really, over the last three decades, you've experienced so many kind of outrageous moments of just, we think back and go, how the hell did that happen? Or just stories that live with you forever. I mean, off the top of your head, is there any like that really come to mind? Is there anyone you've met along the way that really has blown you away?
Yeah, I mean, I've been very lucky. I mean, we've met a lot of like really cool people and some really famous people. I mean, I've obviously met Dave Grohl when he was still, you know, like successful, because, you know, we did some festivals and they were on the same bill, and I met Dave Grohl's mum, which is quite surreal. I was watching the Foo Fighters on the side of the stage talking to Dave Grohl's mum.
Nice.
It was. And I think Taylor Swift was watching as well. I think she was on the side. I don't know what she was doing. And I'm pretty sure Taylor Swift was there. I didn't talk to Taylor Swift. She was on, but I spoke to Dave Grohl's mum. He was really nice. That was quite
nice.
Random.
How did you find out that it was Dave Grohl's? Like, did she have a big beard? Was she like, I'm Dave Grohl's mum? Like, no. What?
Yeah, I think she was really friendly. You know, I think he's quite close with his mum, because he's, I met Dave Grohl's wife as well. She was really nice. But yeah, no, I think she just went out to see a few shows and gone on the road with the Foo Fighters for a while, which is quite surreal. But I mean, look, we've met some amazing people. We've toured with some amazing bands. You know, I've met you too, and you know, we played with them and played with the Rolling Stones. Interesting story, which I'm sure everyone's told, but it might sound very boring to you guys. But I remember when we were doing like these massive stadiums, you know, with the Rolling Stones, it was like, oh my God. And I mean, the backstage was just like, it was just unbelievable. And it was always like, it was all draped out, and Keith Richards had his really cool kind of like sort of hippie vibe going on. It was just amazing. Honestly, it was like just kind of how you imagine it kind of in your mind. But in the catering bit, which was where the band were using as well, apparently we were told you can have anything you want, but don't but don't have the shepherd's pie until Keith's had it. Have you heard this story? It's no. True, right? Keith Richards really likes shepherd's pie, but he has to be the first guy apparently to have the first spoonful. Once he's had it, it's all right, you can have it, but apparently, yeah, you have to leave it. He doesn't want to come in. I know.
He's got first dibs. He's got first dibs on the pie.
It was like, he has to have the first cut of the pie. That's what we were told. That's what we were winding us up. So we were like, okay, just don't touch the shepherd's pie. Was that kick us off at all? Yeah, it was the most surreal thing ever. I expected him to have like, to be like lines of sushi himself, but no, it was a shepherd. You know, I thought, yeah, respect you.
Hey man, you'd expect like, oh, leave the massive pile of cocaine. That's Keith's. Yeah. No, don't touch the shepherd's pie for fuck's sake. Yeah. Keith will kick off.
You can have everything else. Yeah, but I remember walking backstage and they were, met Charlie Watts and he was really nice. So he was really down to earth. He was just playing like pool and stuff. We were just hanging out. That was quite surreal because it was just one of those bands that's just been around forever, haven't they? It's just, you know, unbelievable. But yeah, I mean, lots of moments really. I'm trying to think of, I know I always get asked this question, so it's hard to find a good story, but that's one that I always remember. But yeah, no, it's been quite a few really, but we've played with some great bands and, you know, you get to meet a lot of people along the way, you know.
Well, was there a moment where like just after you started where you were like, oh, this is working. This is, how is this like? Was it? Did you have a standout moment where you were like playing a festival or something, and you were like, "Do you know what? I think we're gonna make it." Oh no! Oh wait! No. Geez, oh, no, I just, oh, I swear! I swear on my life, I did not mean that. I'm sorry about that. Honest to God,
you know I've got a thing about that song. No, it's fine.
I'm the one who does the puns.
I'm going.
Yeah.
We've lost him. I'm sorry.
Right. It's no, I mean, honestly, with us, it's always been, you know, it has been a bit of a graft. It certainly wasn't an overnight success. We really chipped away, kept doing it, and building up a fan base, coming through the whole Britpop thing when we were a British band. You know, maybe if we'd been in America, it may have happened sooner. But it was a tough time. We built up a fan base. People started to notice, hey, this band have got like 20 people coming. Then they got 80 people and now they've sold it out. So that was part of the feeling something's sort of working. We did, you know, we had a few little companies sort of sniffing around, but they weren't banging the doors down, but they were, there was a few that were interested. And then we did, I remember when we did Reading, because we started off on the Dr. Martin stage or something, like the little Dr. Martin tent, as it was called. And then we worked our way up to the main stage. We were on quite early. I remember the exact time. And normally the early spot on a big festival is normally pretty tough. It's usually about, you know, you think like, yeah, big festival. And it's usually about two people at the front. You know, they're all asleep still, you know. But it was packed. We had a massive turnout. And it was the Reading... It might have been Reading 97 or something. We were three piece. In fact, actually, Tacker posted some footage. He found some old videos, some old stuff of us playing. And we were playing songs like, you know, we had High and we were playing, you know, Descend and Shade and stuff like that. And it was a real turning point. And I just felt it. You just feel the chemistry on stage. We were kind of really going for it, like really digging in. And we just pulled this big crowd. Everyone's going, who are this band, you know? And that, for me, was probably one of the big, big turning points, you know? Certainly, you know, why I felt like we were doing something and it was starting to pay off. Doing things like getting on top of the props for the first time. You know, it was a show I'd watched since I was a kid. And, you know, being a rock band, getting on there was a big thing. And that was quite a big thing for us as a band. And, you know, getting on the radio for the first time. I mean, but for me, if you ask me one, I would say, yeah, definitely that Reading gig for me.
Nice. Nice. Well, speaking of huge moments like that and kind of talking earlier about the different kind of audiences and sides of the band and everything, I did want to touch on back in 2005 when you headlined Download Festival. Because that at the time, they were just transforming it kind of from that Monsters of Rock legacy. And looking at that lineup earlier, the other headliners were Black Sabbath and System of a Down. And I know, obviously, you do have those influences of heavier bands. You mentioned how massive Black Sabbath was as an influence for you. But, like, what was that performance like in particular? Like, did it seem a really interesting moment for the band? Like, especially now when you look back on it?
It was, you know what? It was a really tough gig for us because they were trying to make it a bit more alternative rock, not so, you know. And I remember doing the press thing and it was a big thing. And we got to meet Ozzy and stuff. And I think, you know, Sharon was there. And it was a big thing. We were like, God, are we going to be all right for this? So what we did was we thought, we've got heavy songs if you go back to our earlier stuff. So I approached it in a kind of, let's go out there and do all the heavy stuff and not really worry too much about the more well-known songs. So the first half of the set was pretty much the proper heavy feeder stuff, thinking it really worked. Always like lots of metalers in the audience, lots of black and lots of serious faces. And it was, God, I thought it was just, you know, we were playing well, but it was pretty hard work, I felt. And I was really starting to get frustrated on stage. And I was thinking, well, you know, what's going on? And I remember it's the only time, and I wouldn't do it again probably, I smashed up my Fender Jazzmaster at that gig.
Oh,
I smashed
wow.
it up on stage. I did the proper...
Yeah.
The weird thing is, if you go online and try and find any footage of that gig, it's got footage, but they've edited it out. I don't know why, because I have to admit, I wouldn't mind seeing that again.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
But I lost it. Right, Taka was looking over me and he saw the guitar. He goes, "What's he doing?" And I have to admit, it's really hard to break a Fender, especially a Jazzmaster. You know, you see old footage of Jimi Hendrix trying to break that Strat. I tell you, it doesn't break in one go.
No.
And I just had this guitar. I just had it all set up, bought all these new pickups. It was a really lovely one, and it was, you know, probably worth a couple of grand. And I smashed it up. Anyway, wow. So but yeah. I've still got the neck, and Taka helped me put it together. Me, you know, with his rebirth thing, because he makes guitars and stuff. And so the neck is actually on one of my jazz masters that I play live still. Oh. But I think the body ended up in the audience in bits.
Yeah.
Anyway, but following on, so after I broke the guitar, we started to play a bit more. Bit more sort of well-known songs, and suddenly he just turned it around. It was really weird because I didn't expect these metal kids and these real metalers to sort of be like really getting into songs like Buck Rogers and like Just Today. I thought they'd be into like Descend and Shade and all that. I completely misread it. It just shows at a festival, I think people just want to hear songs that they really know. And maybe the stuff that we chose for the first half of the set was more old school, proper diehard feeder fans would know. And maybe there wasn't enough of them there. I don't know. But, you know, I think we pulled it off, but it was a tough gig, I have to admit. You know, it wasn't an easy one. Tough audience.
Yeah. Tough crowd.
Tough crowd.
Yeah. We did that. Yeah. We went to the Download 2001 pilot, and there's a band called Death Blooms who are really, really heavy, kind of like a new metal band. And before they went on, they play Venger Boys, We Like to Party. And you've never seen 10,000 metalers smiling and enjoying themselves so much. So, yeah. But I think that's, like you said, across the board, I think it's people want to hear songs. And obviously, Feeder have got some fucking massively anthemic songs as well. So,
I think by that point, you know, when you're headlining a festival, people have been, you know, they've been boozing all day. They're all tired. And they just want to sing along and get into it. And I totally get that. you know, that's what festivals are about. And if you've got some big hitters, you know, some big songs people know, it's like gold at a festival. As you know, as sick as you may be of playing them sometimes, it's part of what you are as a band. I think, you know, I'd be lying to you if I said that, you know, there's songs I much prefer playing to some of the more commercial stuff, but you know, those songs were probably a big reason why we managed to continue to have a career and to make records as well, you know, and have labels like Believe in the Band and actually make some money out of the band. Oh, is that your, is that I see something behind you.
The dog, yeah. The dog's trying to come into the podcast here, but.
Is that Jack Russell?
She's
so cute.
Chihuahua and Pug.
Yeah, I can see that. Oh, God. Yeah,
Chug.
My missus would go mad. She loves that mix. She's so cute. So,
Chug.
There we are.
Chug, yeah. I know. There's quite a few Chugs in this area, actually. Hold on a second. I'll get you. Hold on.
Oh, what's this? Are we having a dog off? Like, I haven't got a dog. This is your fair. The fuck are we showing each other? Right, wait, the grand comes back. I'll say something to show. Oh, this isn't fair.
This is Bamboo. Come on, where are you going? You might have seen her on a few feeder t-shirts.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Mad. Famous cat. Bamboo.
Yeah.
Nice.
She's a Burmese cat. She's like follows me everywhere, but she hangs out in the studio. She's quite critical of the music sometimes, but she does like a good riff.
Nice.
This is our first ever Sapling podcast. Pet off.
Yeah.
She's still here, but she's been hard to get there. There she is.
Nice. Am I gonna have to get one of my goldfish in a cup? Is that what's going on here? Like, hey, look at that face! Like, I've got nothing, I've got a dog, I've got a cat.
Oh, I didn't expect to be a show in animals. That's absolutely brilliant. Yeah. I've loved that.
I've got a cat. My tacker's got a dog called Bertie, you know, lovely dog, and you know, we're real animal lovers. I mean, I love cats and dogs. It's just that sometimes if you're away and stuff, a cat's a little bit easier, but I wouldn't mind, you know, I wouldn't mind having a cats and dogs all over the house, but it's, you know, one day I will. But Burmese cats are more like it. They're in between a cat and a dog personality wise. You know, they're quite clever. They're not like a typical kind of moggy cat. They're quite a different temperament. Anyway, enough about their cats.
As we start to wind down here, touching on those, some of the mega hits you've had and really all those tracks over the years and what goes down well live, is there any feeder song in particular you feel is kind of not appreciated enough, like for you, is it like the ultimate feeder song that you wish had either been pushed more as a single or had that maybe momentum behind it a little bit more?
That's quite a tough one. I don't know. I mean, there's songs. Just trying to think of one in particular. There's songs I thought that might be more successful than they were, but it's really hard to answer that. I mean, I thought like Tallulah, which is not a heavy song. I know it's not like a big heavy rock song, but I thought Tallulah, which was the album title track on the last record, I always thought that should have been a single. I felt like it had something. People seem to really get it, and when we play it live, it's got something, you know. I think that should have got some radio play, but it was never really pushed as a single. It's so hard because, you know, back in the day when, you know, we've had quite a lot of freedom as a band, you know, getting involved with what we put out, but there's always a little bit of give and take, especially when you've got labels who are paying for stuff. And I do think that there's been times where we haven't necessarily picked the right songs or picked songs that reflected the album that well, but it hasn't been too bad. But there's been a few that I personally probably wouldn't have picked as singles, but sometimes these things happen, you know. I mean, I always thought My Perfect Day was a good song from Polythene, our first album. I always thought that should have been, I always felt that had something about it. Certainly at that point, I think, you know, it was a real song of the 90s. But for me, the songs that I think I'm probably most proud of are the ones that still work, that, you know, maybe that were written a long time ago. Songs like, I mean, High is a very simple song, but it still connects to people and it still has a place. To me, those are the little gems that you have once in a while, you know, just the one feeling will always be a feeling classic, you know. You know, people forget, but I mean, like Feeling a Moment is as well. I mean, people talk about Buck Rogers all the time, Just Stay, but we've got a lot of other songs that actually probably got as much, if not more, radio play than that song. But people just seem to, there's something about the song, or maybe it's the type, or maybe it's the fact it's so silly and simple. I don't know. I'm not gonna beat myself up over it, but it's a combination of, I think a lot of people who don't know the band know our music more than they actually know the name of the band, if that makes sense.
Okay, I get that.
Yeah, they go, oh, you know, it's weird, but it's always been like that with Feeder. Mm.
Yeah, I think when you talk about like Buck Rogers and Just a Day or whatever, I think you've got to keep in mind, like, because I know you were probably super busy at the time, but for us people who were kind of like coming up with it, like Buck Rogers and Just a Day were on constantly on TV, on Kerrang TV, on MTV too. Like, you couldn't get away from it. And it's amazing, don't get me wrong, but I think...
I'm sorry about that.
No, thank you. No, genuinely thank you for it, because, yeah, fucking hell, I had many a summer party with friends listening to these tracks and stuff, so... I think whereas, you know, you might be fed up of people talking about those songs, maybe you don't realise that they were massive parts of people's lives growing up. Whether you like it or not, I guess it's like,
No, look, I mean, you know, I hate saying, you know, I'm not saying it in a pretentious way, but you know, they have become sort of indie anthems in their way. You know, they're indie, and everyone knows them. And you know, Just a Day, and the lyrics are actually quite dark in the song, but people connect with it, and it just makes people jump up and dance. It's a party song. And Buck Rogers is just quirky. I mean, I've said this story so many times, you probably know, but I mean, I wrote that song for another band originally, for a US band. I wanted to work with Gil Norton, who was a producer that worked with loads of really cool bands, Pixies, Foo Fighters, and we really wanted to work with him, but he was just impossible to get to. He was like the guy to work with, and he was incredibly busy, and we thought he'd never be interested in working with us, but I had an opportunity to do some writing for a band that he was working with at the time that was short of a radio song. And I started writing Buck Rogers when I was a little bit worse for wear one night. I'd just broken up with my missus, and she was dating some producer that was making a car advert. That's where the lyric came from. He's got a brand new car. A little bit bitter. I think in the back of my mind, I think I was starting to see somebody else as well. But in the back of my mind, I was thinking, you know, we'll probably get back together again. So there was that positive chorus. And then basically, I said, here's a song, get the singer of this band to rewrite the lyrics. If they like it, great. If it's a hit, feed it for them, great. You know, we get royalties anyway. Here it is. And then basically, our label, who were called Echo at the time, and Gil said, don't give this song away. This could be a hit for you guys. And we were like, what? It's just guide lyrics. And I'm keeping around here. That is a true story. And but I do always wonder if I had given it to the band, you know, would it have been a hit for them?
Yes, very.
Never know.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. You never know.
You never quite know.
Never know.
Yeah. You never quite know. Yeah. And so that's why that song is bizarre. And I actually rewrote the lyrics in the studio, and I had a bit of an argument with Gil, because he goes, oh, you've ruined it now. I said, I'm going to sing, it's got a brand new kind of say. And he goes, yeah, but that's what people are going to get with it. I said, but it's so simple and silly. And I was like, yeah, he said, that's what makes it really quirky and odd. So anyway, after a lot of arguing, I backed down, and it went on to be a really, you know, big song for us. And then Just a Day became a big song, because it was going to be an American single for the second album, purely for America. But the album got held back. It didn't ever come out in the end, and it became a B-side on 7 Days in the Sun single, and it was just sort of done. We didn't even play it live, and then it got picked up by GT2, you know, the Gran Turismo game, and they were massive, and it was the lead track, and it was a huge game, and it just ignited that. It was a combination of that and the video with all the fans in.
Oh, the
that
video.
It's just like, it just made it this thing. It made it like a cult song. And that's why I think that's why people still know it so well.
Oh yeah. That video was amazing. I just remember seeing it and thinking, this is fantastic that a band has taken video, you know, has got video of their fans and they're using it. And yeah. Do you ever, when was the last time you saw somebody from that video in person?
I did see one of the little, he was like a real young kid in there. I can't remember which one he, And I saw him. He was working for some like Kerrang radio or something.
Oh, wow.
He was doing something at Kerrang. And I met him. He must have been about 7'5". He was absolutely ginormous. I mean, I'm not very tall, but he was huge. And yeah. I was like, oh my God, is that the guy looking for the video?
Yeah.
So
I've only met a couple of them,
but that video only happened because we were on tour in Europe with REM, and we did a few tours with REM, and for some reason they really liked Feeder. You wouldn't actually put REM with, you wouldn't put Feeder with REM, but it worked anyway. And we were going to fly back to do a video. We were like, oh, can we just not come back? And is there any way they can do a video and we're not in it? And the director, David Mould, was a big fan of You Being Framed. So,
right.
Yeah, because you have to remember how old that video is. I mean,
yeah.
That video, and that was before all the stuff that's going on now. There was no social media. There was no YouTube, anything like that. It was so ahead of its time. He goes, I've got this idea. It's just not telling fans, but getting, because you said you've got such a great fan base, real diehard fans, could get them to sort of say that they can audition to be in a Feeder video or something like that. So you can you just film yourself like goofing around, to this music? And that's how it came about. And it was just, they had hundreds in, they picked the ones they thought were good. And it was all edited. And I remember we got sent it. We were on our tour bus. I was sat down with Taka and John Lee, and we put on the video. And it was because, it was all like video cassettes then. And we put it on. We watched it. We were like, we thought, what's this? And it was like, this is either like the best video we've ever done or the worst. We just couldn't, fortunately it went on to be a real cult video for us. And, but it was just a very simple, but like clever idea. So fair play to the director, David Mould. I mean, he was way ahead of his time on that one.
Yeah. Well, I've absolutely loved this whole conversation. So thank you so much, Grant. But just before you go, obviously, again, the new record, Torpedoes, come out in March 2022. You will be touring then next year across the UK for a headliner in April and May. But is there anything else we can expect in the meantime? Any other surprises along the way?
Yeah. Well, there's going to be more music, as I told you. And also, I just want to say, I did see a few things up on our Instagram and Facebook about, there's no Welsh date again. Well, there's a reason for that, because after the COVID thing, there's a real shortage. Everyone wants to play. So all the venues are rammed. So we couldn't get the right venue. So we did a recent gig in Swansea with the Catfish and Bottle Men. So we have done a few things in Wales. And I'm also playing with Noel Gallagher and High Flying Birds. We're doing one in North Wales thing. And then, but we are working on doing a Welsh date on maybe a second leg of the tour. So not forgetting Wales. Of course, I want to come and play Wales. I've got my mates who want to come and see me. So I just want people to know that I'm not dissing Wales. It's just we couldn't get the venue at the time.
Yeah,
it's all good.
So we will be back. And there'll be more new, and there'll be more music. And on the next tour, by the way, it's going to be a pretty heavy Feeder set. So don't expect a best of. It's going to be a revisiting some really early Feeder stuff. A lot of the new album, Torpedo. And maybe a few old classics.
Nice. Well,
so it'll be a good mix, but it's going to be a heavy tour. It's going to be like proper 90s, like feel like rocking out. So I'm just warning you, it's going to be loud.
Nice. Well, yes, if we could, we'd love to do one of these in the flesh. So if that's possible,
definitely
come along to that. And then you can see us in the pit.
Thanks, guys. Well, listen, thanks. So obviously, it's been lots of fun, and hopefully, you got something there which has some interest for people listening.
Yeah, for sure. People will love this.
Wait here. Thank you for everything, right? Thank you for the music. Thank you for the inspiration to show me that people from Wales can fucking leave, right? And that's amazing. Like, and get out
that's
and tour. To get out and tour. You're amazing. Everything you've done is fucking class. We love you. Thank you very much.
We do. Thank you, man.
Oh, cheers, guys. Well, thanks a lot. And and come and see us on the tour. And we will be back. We will come back to Wales as well. But we're doing Bristol. If you want to come to Bristol, I think there's talk of a Cardiff date in October, but I didn't tell you that. We'll fly the flag anyway, boys, and we'll spread the word.
You're listening to Sapping Podcast.
Yes.
Woo!
Yes, thank you very much, Grant. He said, well done to Grant then. Yeah, well done to Grant for surviving talking to us.
thank you very much for doing the podcast, and thank you very much for the songs over the years. I know he doesn't really like to talk about Buck Rogers, but you should, because it's a fucking massive song that's fucking class, that we all love and we all remember, and it all fucking holds a place in our hearts.
It's interesting to see how like mega hits like that are separated a little bit from the actual artists who perform them and wrote them and everything. But, you know, they've got so many mega hits as it is, and I know that he's really proud of a lot of them, but Just a Day and Buck Rogers, like, they're elite indie anthems. So, you know, there's a lot of people listening to this that they would have affected their lives. So he should definitely be proud. And I'm very thankful they took the time to do this, even though you did do the accidental pun and your face.
Bro.
Your face. You couldn't believe you did that. I don't know how you managed it, to be honest.
I tell you what we should do for the socials then. Maybe if there's a bit we can somehow... can we clip that of me
saying... I'll have a go,
and then people... Yeah, so check out our socials, at Sappening Pod on Twitter, Instagram. Check out our Patreon, patreon.com/Sappening, because up there we will put the reaction to me saying to Grant from Frida, was there a moment when you thought... Boys, I think we're going to make it.
I can't believe you did that.
Bro, I can't believe I said... You saw my... Like, I nearly died inside. And the fact I got up and walked away was fucking brilliant. Sorry again, Grant. I genuinely... You know what I'm like, right? Every week, Morgan does fucking puns at the beginning of this podcast, right? And it grinds my gears and boils my blood, right? So for me to do it... to a guest's face, right, of one of the bigger songs that he's not that fussed about talking about, right? Oh, my God, I fucking died inside. I can't tell you. After it, right, I had to go and sit down and have a cup of tea on my own and just be like, I can't believe I did that. I was expecting an email off Grant offering to fight me in Newport Centre.
Hey, that's not a bad charity match. I think I'll sell a few tickets. But all the love to Grant you could possibly send. You know, he's a very... fairly influential. There's so many people that, you know, his music has helped. And I just love the fact we talked about everything from Dave Grohl's mum to the fact that my girlfriend's dog invaded the podcast for a bit.
That's
and he
true.
Brought out his cat. So we might clip that. I'm sure that's worth a watch. So we'll put that
on some reason,
Patreon.
Yeah. For some reason, you and Grant went into an animal off.
Yeah.
And I was just sat there going, well, I could go and get a fish in a cup, a goldfish in a cup, boys, but it's not going to win. And also, I know James Dean Bradfield from the Manic Street Preachers listens to this each and every week.
Not religiously.
Number one, yes, we will have you on in time. Stop messaging me about it. And number two, let's get you and Grant together to write some sort of fucking big Welsh fucking song, is it? Because I'd like that. And I'd like us to also have some credit for the involvement. So let's make that happen.
Yes, please. Yes, please. But quick shout out that Feeder's new album, Torpedo, is going to be released on the 18th of March. That is Jan's birthday as well. So put that in your diary twice.
Well remembered.
And I want to shout out Grant's solo album he did back in 2014, titled Yorktown Heights. If you want something a little bit more stripped back from his songwriting imagination, go and check that out. Around the time of release, I got to do a lot of kind of interviews and radio stuff with Grant when I worked in radio. And it's just a lovely album. So I would highly recommend it. And hopefully that UK tour in April and May will go ahead and we'll have a good time in the pit.
I'd very much like to go to that. So, yes, thanks again to Grant. Thanks to Feeder. Unbelievable. Each and every week we seem to be getting people that played a part in our growing up. And I love that. Yeah. I love that very, very much.
Oh, yeah. Well, Feeder was a band that I think me and my dad really bonded over for quite a period. I remember having one of their CDs in his car and stuff, and we just used to listen to that all the time. So yeah, it's just nice that we get to do these and especially dive into Humble Beginnings for the band as well.
Do you know what? I can't stop thinking about making some sort of Welsh supergroup now. Imagine if we got all... And surely we could... Do you know what? The Blackout tried to do this one year for a Christmas song, right? When we were on Raw Power Management, we tried to get the Blackout... Umeå 6, Kids in Glass Houses, Bullet for My Valentine, and a bunch of others to do a Christmas song. And our manager at the time was like, oh, we'll never sort that out in time now. And we were like, all right, then let's just leave it. But imagine how good it would be if like James Dean Bradfield, Grant, Kelly, Jones from Stereophonics, Matt Tuck from Bullet. Like, imagine, this is the thing. It doesn't have to be. It doesn't have, no, yeah, no, but it doesn't have to be indie, does it? This is the thing. No. Like, it doesn't have to be like, imagine you could get like fucking Benji Webb from Skindred. Yeah. Like, let's make a Welsh supergroup, boys. Fucking, I don't have to be in there. I just want to help set it up and fucking listen to the songs. Anyway, I'm just telling my dreams out loud.
It's all right. You never know what we'll bring together on Zapman Podcast, though. Stranger things have happened. Well, we'll have a look. But let us know your ideal supergroups, guests, nice. All sorts of things. Good at Zapman Pod on Twitter and Instagram. We'd love to hear from you. And we'd also love it if you could go and check out our Patreon page, patreon.com/Zapman. As I said in the intro, it helps us make these podcasts each and every week. And we're going to be doing a lot more exclusive content on there very, 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 very soon.
Yeah, check it out, patreon.com/Zapman, where all of the money that we make from the Patreon helps us to make these each and every week. And there is loads of things that you can get back for your support.
Yes, and we'd like to say a special thank you to everyone who's already a dedicated patron of ours. So much, if you head to the description of this episode, there's loads of their names in there that we do thank. But as we do each and every week, Sean is going to give a mahoosive shout out to the elite members of our Zapman Podcast Patreon community.
Yes, thank you very much. Kylie Wheeler, Mayumi Urangutan Close Leeway, Janelle Caston, get well soon, Amadina Urbano, Mitch Perry, Kelly Ewan, Dilly Grimwood, Kelly Young, Paul Hirschfield, Natasha Morris, Emma Barber, Nathan Croshaw, Sammy G, Tony Michael, Kat Besson, Captain Hannibal, Jenny Robinson, Murray Grimwood, Johnny Phillips, Scott Jones, Amy Campion, Alexandra Pemblinton, Mikey McDonald's, McMuffin Buns, Tom, Johnny Knoxville for 2022 Royal Rumble winner Owen. Oh, I did read about that the other day, that Johnny Knoxville's like 85 now. How did that happen?
He hasn't aged well.
We all aged like year at a time, and he seems to have doubled somehow. Anyway, thank you very much, Karen Robinson, Chris Howard, M. Evans Roberts, Louis Cook, Danny Eden, Carl Pendlebury, Martina McManus, James McNaught, Jenny Sexy Boy Munster, Kelly Cannon, Lucy Deeds, Emily Perry, John and Emma, Becky Andy, Jason Heredia, Stuart McNaught, Jordan is a Tory, Harris.
Oh.
Adam King of the Goths Parcel, Ollie Amesbury, Josh, my friend, has designed an invisible aeroplane. I can't see it taking off, Crisp. Thank you very much and congratulations on the new job to Alice Wood. Oh, and also Emily Perry has also started a new job, so congratulations on that. Thank you very much, Reese Bowring, Keris Andrews, Connor Lewins, and last by no means least, the wonderful Kate Stevenson. Thank Woo! You very much.
We love every single person mentioned there and just everyone in the community of our Patreon to help us make this. I think we started very well in 2022 with Grant, and hopefully the rest of the year will be filled with wonderful surprises for you all as well. So thank you for listening. If you're listening to this on Spotify, please give it a 5-star rating, because their rating system, they've started a rating system now. And if you, wherever you listen to it, just rate and leave a nice review and stuff, because that helps us a lot as well. And make sure to share it and put it in your Instagram stories, because the more it gets out there, the better it is for everyone. So do that.
That's true. Yes. Yeah. The more successful we get, the more power hungry and mad we get, and then anything could happen. Also, just let everybody know, I DM'd Fred Durst twice this week, asking him to come on, or at least send a voice message saying, Sean, do me a favour, fucking leave me be. And he sent me back the alien head and the UFO emoji, and that upset me, because the fucking microphone button's right next to there. So why didn't he just go fuck off? Anyway, Zapman!
Zapman!
Oh, I had to get my rant in at the end. Why didn't he just fucking be my friend? Like?
You're listening to Sapnin Podcast with Sean Smith and Morgan Richards. Thank you very much for downloading this podcast or streaming it, or I don't know what else you do with podcasts. Thank you very much.